the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Bill?
Well, we have a sponsor this hour, Aaron. It's Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. And they're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. And they've got everything you want in John Deere. Go up and see them. If it's green, if they don't have it, they can get it for you. They also have a great service department, a parts department. They can fix you up if you're broke down or need repairs. Go up and talk to them or give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or get them on the interweb at...
pull Bill's tongue out during the break. Don't worry.
PapeMachinery.com.
So when you said that when it's green, all I could think of was, when you were sitting at a red light and somebody doesn't go, Bill starts yelling, if it gets any greener, you'll have to mow it.
Well, I mean,
that's a good one.
It is a good one. I think it's a tractor problem, but anyway.
And I have to, every time I on the show and I hear about Pape, it's like stuck in my brain. We were over on the coast camping.
They're everywhere.
And they're everywhere.
Yeah. They're colonized. I know.
Yeah.
I know. The rumors are just getting started.
They're in full colonization mode.
So our guest this hour, we're switching gears. We're switching from the sheriff to AARP, et cetera, and the evils of. Our guest is Phil Kirpin. He is a leading free market policy analyst and advocate in Washington, D.C. He was the principal policy and legislative strategist at Americans for Prosperity for over 5 years. Previously worked at the Free Enterprise Fund, Club for Growth, and the Cato Institute. He's also a nationally syndicated columnist, chairman of the Internet Freedom Coalition, and author of the 2011 book, Democracy Denied. Phil Kirpin is the president of American Commitment, dedicated to restoring and protecting the American commitment to free markets, economic growth, constitutionally limited government, property rights, and individual freedom. They engage in critical public policy fights over the size and intrusiveness of government through direct advocacy, strategic policy analysis, and grassroots mobilization. Working with key partners, American Commitment delivers timely, effective public policy research to the broader free market movement. We're dedicated to restoring and protecting the American commitment to free markets, economic growth, constitutionally limited government, property rights, and individual freedom.
What's not to like?
I know. I'm like, who would not like this? Mr. Kirpin, thanks for coming back on with us. I think the last time we saw you was in April, and we've got a couple previous shows like from 2020 and 2022 posted on the website for you. Always interesting topics that sometimes fly under the radar a wee bit.
Hey, my pleasure, and good record keeping. I don't know exactly when I was on, but I'm going to check the website and find the old one.
I'm going to lie, and you're going to swear to it or something like that. We're going to do that. But I thought this was interesting. The article, and I've posted all this on the page for today. I should tell people today is July 9th, 2023, in case we replay this. Comprehensive survey of voters 55 and over, and I just want you to know, our friend Kathy Grindstaff is here. She's 55 and older, and Bill and I are definitely 55 and over.
So 55. Barely.
Yeah, well, Bill's. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 55 plus on key health care concerns, Inflation Reduction Act, the act we all learned to hate right away, and AARP's advocacy activities. So,
let me tell you why we did this poll and, kind of what this project is all about. We've been losing a lot of healthcare policy debates. We, meaning conservatives, we've been losing a lot of healthcare policy debates for a long time. And, of course, the most famous one, of course, was Obamacare. And I think we all remember the destructive role that AARP played in that when they endorsed the bill and claimed that seniors were for it, even though raiding Medicare was kind of one of the main funding mechanisms. And, Democrats ended up paying a big price for that politically, but we're still living with it as a country. The thing was never repealed despite all of the promises from Republicans. And last year we got sort of a kind of a smaller scale replay of that in that the absurdly misnamed Inflation Reduction Act again, used Medicare as a piggy bank, as a source of funding for other unrelated spending. This time they cut Medicare prescription drug spending through government price controls, and they took the money out of Medicare to give it to, you know, green energy companies and wind and solar and electric vehicles and, you know, all of the other stuff that was stuffed into that bill. And once again, out leading the charge, saying this is what seniors wanted, was AARP. And, you know, we've been fighting back on them for a number of years now, and talking about the conflict of interest they have with making most of their money from their partnership with United Health, and the fact that they actually have a conflict of interest because they benefit from higher premiums because they skim 5% off the top of all the premiums of all the United Health plans that are AARP branded, and so they actually make more money when seniors are paying higher premiums. And, you know, we've been kind of making all these arguments. The reason we wanted to do a poll was we wanted to know if we were winning, if we were convincing the public, if you know, we actually had made inroads in terms of public opinion and understanding of, you know, Inflation Reduction Act and the conflict of interest issues and so forth. And I have to tell you, I was pretty happy about these survey results. Seniors are a lot smarter, I think, than the media and the Democrats give them credit for. And they don't think Inflation Reduction Act can reduce what they pay for drugs. They do think it's going to mean there are fewer new drugs and treatments available to them. And they are extremely concerned about the various conflict of interest issues with AARP and United Health. And so we got all these numbers. We've been talking about them. We've been pushing them around. We've been trying to give them to Republicans and telling them to use them, because I didn't hear any of these arguments made on the campaign trail last year. Republicans did their usual thing. Healthcare comes up, and they try to change the subject or go running. They just assume that, healthcare, Medicare, those are Democrat things. We'll talk about something else. And they missed a huge opportunity. They missed a huge opportunity to say, what such and such Democrat voted for amounted to siphoning hundreds of billions of dollars out of Medicare to give away to the green energy companies. And, you know, AARP only cheered for it because they're in the pocket of the biggest health insurance company in the country, and they make money from it. You know, I think that if we could get some candidates to lean into it, this is actually a big winning issue. So that's the main takeaway, and I'm happy to go through, you know, any of the specific numbers or anything you wanted to get into from the poll.
Well, they always... you know, when anybody says anything about how Obamacare is not working and how these things, it's other things that are messing up Medicare. What's the tidy way for, like, just regular people who aren't policy analysts to kind of fight back on that, or to be knowledgeable? Sound knowledgeable. Give us a cheat sheet.
Well, I mean,
exactly.
The Yeah, I don't know if there's a short answer to that question.
Well, that's okay. You can give us the long answer, because this will be on tape. We can listen to it again.
Right.
We're old, but we can remember stuff.
Well, we've got a really major problem. We've got a major problem in the financing of Medicare, because we've got a population that's getting older, and we've got fewer working people to support it. And mm-hmm. That's why we're dealing with a sort of a trust fund insolvency issue. At the same time, we've got provider costs that are rising pretty significantly, especially in my view, because there's been so much consolidation in the hospital and the doctors and the other providers. You've now just got these large health systems, and a lot of places they don't have much competition, and they're able to demand higher and higher prices. And we've got sort of a lack of choices and competition that drives up prices. So we've got a situation where we've got fewer and fewer working people paying into a system where costs are continuing to rise pretty sharply. And so that's kind of the fundamental fiscal problem. And, you know, what the politicians said, you know, their take on it, which what they did in this Inflation Reduction Act, was, well, the way we're going to save money is we're going to dramatically reduce what Medicare spends on prescription drugs. And, you know, there are basically two problems with that. One is that, if you spend a lot less on prescription drugs, you're going to get fewer new prescription drugs, fewer new cures and treatments. And, as a consequence of that, you're probably going to have more hospitalizations and long-term care, which is actually more expensive than if you had, say, a breakthrough cancer drug or Alzheimer's drug. And so undermining the incentive for new cures can ultimately be even more costly than getting those incentives right.
That's a good
point. The second problem, though, with their approach is they didn't use any of that money to shore up Medicare. It's not like they kept it in Medicare to fix its financing problem, because, of course, they spent all the money that they saved through price controls on prescription drugs on wind and solar giveaways and electric vehicles and, you know, supersized Obamacare subsidies and all the other spending that was in the so-called Inflation Reduction Act. And by the way, they claimed there was deficit reduction, and less than a year later, now the official estimates show there's no deficit reduction. The bill actually increases the deficit because they spend every dollar that they take out of Medicare and that they got in, you know, the business tax hikes that were in that bill, and then some. The cost of the green energy giveaways has already more than doubled in a year. And so, you know, you could say, maybe you could say, you know, prescription drugs are a place Medicare could save money and spend less. I'm a little bit concerned, you know, about how you can do that without, you know, undermining the availability of new cures and treatments and so forth. But I think everyone would agree that if they can, if Medicare can spend less on drugs, the money ought to have been kept in Medicare.
Absolutely.
Sure enough,
well, I don't think most people,
all that other spending.
Yeah, they're using logic. They would think that was kind of a no-brainer, but
yeah, I just don't think most people know that the money didn't go back to Medicare.
Mm-mm.
Right.
No.
Well, that's the thing, right? Because the Republicans who oppose this bill, they never talk. They don't want to talk about Medicare because they, you know, somebody told them all Medicare is a Democrat, so they don't.
The big thing with that is, and we see it over and over, I think the most recent guy was somebody in Florida, and if you even utter the words Social Security or Medicare, especially at the Fed, you know, if you're in the House or the Senate, if you mention those words, like we're gonna take a hard look at that, then all of a sudden you're trying to get rid of it. They immediately jump on this. Yeah. They're trying to get rid of Medicare.
Have you noticed that if a Republican says, like,
it's crazy,
you know, if a Republican says, for instance, you know, we ought to have a Greenspan-style commission like we had in the 80s to shore up Social Security's finances, which is basically, by the way, what DeSantis voted for in the budget that Trump is attacking him for voting for, is basically, you know, included in those alternative budgets was like a commission, like the Greenspan-style commission to shore up Social Security. But what does that turn into on the campaign trail? He voted to raise the retirement age. He wants to destroy Social Security. And so you're right. What happens is, if anybody talks about anything related to the entitlement problem, they just get blown up politically. They get torched politically. But there's an asterisk on that. That's if they're a Republican. If they're a Democrat, they talk about it, they can actually do it. They can actually raise billions of dollars out for other spending, and it's fine.
That's the thing that's really, really deceitful.
Like, fake fact checkers tell them that it isn't happening, even though it is, and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it is. It's really deceitful, and because every single election cycle, I mean, honestly, it's like clockwork. Every election cycle, the Republicans want to take away Medicare and Social Security, and then they'll take some itty-bitty soundbite where some guy says, you know, we should really take a look at the Social Security age thing, and it's like, that's it, they're taking it away, they're trying to get rid of seniors, and it's like, oh my God, you can't even talk about it.
I think
they'd all have to do it on the same day, maybe. They couldn't get after them all.
Well, and to me, this is a subject, it shouldn't be one party or the other party. This is affecting all of us in the United States. Well, us older people.
So that's everybody,
well,
isn't it?
I think every younger person hopes to be an older person.
That's true, too.
Well, but I actually believe the younger generation has it in their mind. It's not going to exist when they're older anyway, so why bother?
Well, you know, that's one of the challenges with these entitlement programs. You know, if you do nothing, then you get a massive benefit cut. You either get a massive benefit cut, or they just print the money to pay the benefits, and you get chronic inflation. You know, you get one or the other. I mean, there's no. Yeah. The longer you wait to address it, the harder the solutions are, and the only solutions kind of become non-solutions, right? They either say, you know, now we're going to turn these into welfare programs, and anybody who isn't dirt poor doesn't get them, right? Or they say, we're going to cut the benefits for everyone across the board. Or they say, we're going to keep the promises, but we're going to have to print all the money. And
yeah,
the price of everything goes up.
They all kind of go someplace bad.
Very bad answers.
Yeah. When we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I know that I can feel people seizing because we use the word entitlement, but that does make sense, even though people paid into it, and I guess we should clear that. that up maybe when we return. Our guest is Phil Kirpin. You're listening to We the People, and I found a theme song for Medicare. I thought they should have their own theme song. So you heard it here first at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
This is Officer Joe with your marijuana safety message. Did you know that the marketing of marijuana is a misogynistic and racist activity? That's right. Most marijuana corporations are owned and controlled by rich, fat cat white corporate types, and most dispensaries are placed into depressed communities of color. These communities can least afford the chains of drug addiction and corporate greed. For more information about marijuana, please visit sources like ALM, Americans Against Legalizing Marijuana, at www.aalm.info. And remember, let's be careful out there.
Brother bought a coconut, he bought it for the diamond. Sister had another one, she paid it for the lime. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she called the doctor, woke him up and said, "Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take?" I said, "Doctor, to relieve this bellyache." I said, "Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take?" I said, "Doctor."
And that's where we'll be in 20 years. That will be real. So Phil, when people call them entitlements, and the bulk of the population freaks out because they paid into it, they don't feel it should be called an entitlement. What do you say to that?
Yeah, we actually we asked a question about that in our survey, and we said we said, which come closest to your views? We said, is Medicare a benefit that you and your family receive from the government, or is it something you and your family earned from working and paying into it? And it was 15 to 85 that it was the second.
So yeah.
People don't like the idea that it's a government program, and of course, you know, it is a government program. But if you've been paying it tax on every paycheck you've ever made in your entire life into something, then you feel like it's something that you earned because you did. Of course, you and I know that the way the financing works, the money you paid in was spent, you know, right when it came in,
right,
for many decades ago, and it's somebody else that's paying for you now because they never invested the money in anything. Congress spent it all. And by the way, you know, this is a really upsetting thing, particularly about Social Security. We had very large surpluses for a long time, and we had multiple presidents that wanted to actually invest them. And Bill Clinton actually got this right. He wanted to invest the surpluses. He couldn't get Congress to go along. And then, of course, Bush wanted to invest them via personal accounts, and he got torched politically. It basically blew up his second term. And, of course, now there are no surpluses. Now it's in deficit. Too late to use the surpluses to, you know, build up, market returns and use that to cover the cost of benefits. And so if we had done reforms early enough, we would have had a really positive solution instead of just the negative ones of benefit cuts and, you know, reducing eligibility, raising retirement age, that kind of thing. If we had actually harnessed the power of real investments, we could have paid higher benefits, you know, through those higher returns.
Mm-hmm.
But the politics of that just didn't quite ever work. And when it comes to Medicare, of course, we've got a bigger problem, which is the amount of money that comes in is much smaller than the amount of money that comes in for Social Security, because the Medicare payroll tax is much smaller than the Social Security payroll tax. And, you know, mm-hmm. historically, that's because Medicare was a much smaller program. But now, healthcare costs have increased so much, and people are living so much longer lives that the Medicare unfunded liability is now much bigger than the Social Security unfunded liability. It's something like $50 trillion of net present value, and you know, there are no great solutions to that. That said, if you really think you can save hundreds of billions on prescription drugs, it's criminal to take it out of Medicare when you have such a huge funding gap in Medicare. And that's, I think, where the Democrats are really vulnerable in what they did last year, which is an easier thing to explain than getting into, you know, why price controls maybe aren't the best idea for prescription drugs.
Yeah, that's true, because that does, I don't know, you know, we've talked about it many times in the show with a variety of topics, but it's the same as with kids and dogs, you know, when you're explaining, you're losing. And this requires, unfortunately, kind of some explaining.
Yeah, although I will say that with basically zero help from the media, you know, we asked in this poll, do you think there'll be fewer drugs and treatments available as a result of the price controls that were put in? And 80% of seniors said yes. We said, do you think you're going to pay less on your own prescription drug prices? And only 14% of said yes. And so even just on the headline level of whether government should be setting prices, most people think are pretty, you know, suspicious of that it's actually going to cause more harm than good.
Yeah, and that ought to be pretty telling. The one thing we should add, like with Social Security, that is really, I don't know, it's crazy. It's like a rumor that started a really long time ago that never goes away. But I have so many people I hear from that will say, well, if we weren't giving Social Security to illegal aliens, then, you know, that program would be fine. And so just to put a, like, put a pin in that balloon. SSI, Social Security Insurance, the low income program, does not come out of your Social Security, the Social Security, I don't know, fund, not that there is really exactly a fund, but anyway, it doesn't come out of what people have put in from work. It is paid through the Social Security Administration. It's administered there, but it isn't the equivalent, because I've got people who don't have enough quarters, and I can't get Social Security, but illegal aliens can. It's like, no, those are different. I don't know.
Well, and I look, you know, back in the day when I was a teenager and first started working, and we briefly learned about Social Security and stuff, and I looked at it going, well, whatever I'm paying in is paying for my grandparents. You know, that's how I looked at it.
Well, my daughter went to work.
But now,
most people don't quite get that. But
yeah, but now I feel like it's our children who are paying for us. It's not even a multi-generational anymore because it is at a deficit.
I just liked it when my stepdaughter got her first she got her first paycheck, and she called and she wanted to know who FICA was and how they got all her money. Like, well, welcome to the world. It was FICA.
So Phil, I got a question. What do you think it's going to take for AARP to kind of reverse their trend and actually advocate for seniors instead of
themselves?
Yeah, I mean, with the billions they're making, do people just not realize that AARP is enriching themselves at the cost of seniors?
Well, I don't know how many of them know it, and of course that's one of the major things that we're focused on trying to expose. And, you know, we got some incredible numbers in this poll related to the relationship that AARP has with UnitedHealthcare. And for any of your listeners who are not aware of this, the majority of AARP's revenue now comes from corporate royalties, and they make about triple what they bring in membership dues just from their biggest corporate royalty deal, which is with UnitedHealthcare. They make about $800 million to $1 billion a year from their deal with UnitedHealthcare. And the way it works is anyone who buys an AARP-branded plan from UnitedHealthcare, whether it's a Part D plan or whether it's a Medicare Advantage plan or a Medigap supplemental plan, every month when you pay your premium, they take 5% off the top and they send it to AARP. That is, they call it a royalty for licensing their name. And yeah, these are pretty smart people with pretty smart lawyers, and so by calling it a royalty instead of a commission, they don't follow any of the state insurance laws or any of that, because United is selling it, not AARP, and they're licensing the name, essentially. But 5% of the premiums every month forever when you are in an AARP-branded plan are going to AARP. They're getting skimmed off the top, and that's become kind of the principal business that they're in, and it's a big business. You know, if they're getting $1 billion a year with the 5%, you know, that means United's selling $20 billion a year in premiums in those plans.
Right.
So we're talking big, big business. And, of course, you know, $1 billion a year to an advocacy group, it's not like a, you know, it's not like a for-profit business. In the for-profit business world, you know, $1 billion is big. It makes you an important company, but it's not earth-shaking. In the advocacy world that AARP plays in, it makes them, you know, 10 times the size of any other group. And, you know, they've got an enormous political throw weight as a consequence of the massive amount of money they have. And so, you know, one of the reasons that the coverage of Inflation Reduction Act was so distorted and one-sided in Democrats' benefit is AARP spent hundreds of millions of dollars on advertising and phone calls and events and all of this stuff supporting that bill and supporting the Democrats who voted for it. And in fact, you know, we did an analysis. There are about 100 members of Congress, House, and Senate that AARP supported last year with events and advertising and so forth. And only one of them was a Republican. And by the way, it was a Republican who was going to win anyway. It was Mike Crapo from Idaho who had, you know, token opposition but was going to win anyway. And so they've got a sea of money coming in because of the way they're set up with all of this corporate royalty money. And they use it to promote, you know, the agenda and the policy that's beneficial to the insurance industry, but also to Democrats. So it's sort of a fusion of the Democrats, the insurance industry, and an advocacy group that still has a brand that makes people think of seniors, even though they've really been representing more their own interests in this corporate relationship for a long time than what seniors are actually interested in. And, you know, the poll numbers we got on this, I mean, they were incredible. 85% of older voters told us they were concerned about the relationship they have with United Healthcare. 80% said that it creates a conflict of interest, you know, for the obvious reason that they make more money when premiums are higher. And so, you know, they act like, you know, premiums aren't a problem. I mean, they act like the only thing anyone cares about is drug prices, premiums are not a problem, when actually more people are concerned about paying their premiums than they are about paying their drug counter. Premiums are the much bigger problem.
Yeah, I hear about that all the time.
They make more money from premiums. They make more money if you have high premiums. And they're supposedly your advocacy group. Think about that. 88% of the older voters in our survey said that AARP should not have supported the IRA after we told them it diverted Medicare drug savings for unrelated spending. And the number that I found the most shocking, because I'm not sure I've ever seen, I don't think the sky is blue with poll this high, 95% of older voters said there should be a clear public disclosure of the financial relationship AARP has with UnitedHealth in their advertising and lobbying. And
that's pretty good.
Have 95% of anyone ever agreed on that?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a high
volume. So as a senior signing up for Medicare, and you're aware of this relationship with UnitedHealthcare, what are your options?
Well, I think you have to think long and hard before you choose an AARP branded plan. I think you should definitely search around at, you know, there are many, many companies that offer these various Medicare plans. There are many United plans that don't carry the AARP branding if you do want United. And if you do choose, these are popular plans for a reason. I understand that. People like them. But if you do choose them, understand that they're taking a 5% skim every month, and it's probably going to left-wing politics.
Right.
So I think people need to be informed consumers. The other thing is, you know, go on the actual Medicare site and do your searching on there, because if you just type it into Google, you might end up on the AARP site where you're only going to see their branded plans because they have that exclusive deal with United. So I think people need to, you know, do their homework before they choose a plan.
Is it, the whole Medicare thing is just super complicated. If somebody's trying to figure out, you know, how the plans work and what they ought to do, I mean, as you guys got into this farther and farther, where would you send somebody to get good information to make good choices about how to access their Medicare options?
Well, I think the
or a couple,
the official site. The official site is probably where you want to start, on Medicare.gov, where you can look through the plans, and it's going to be, you know, relatively apples to apples. The other thing you need to do is you got to call the providers that you want to use and see what plans they're in, especially if you're looking at Medicare Advantage plans. You know, you got to know what the participation is going to be. Make sure that the doctors you use, make sure the facilities you use participate in the given plan before you select it. And
that's a good point.
You know, That's, I think, the most important thing, is doing that homework and, you know, making sure that it's a plan that works for the providers you want to use. But, you know, unfortunately, I don't think there's, like, some great magic place you can go that's going to give you, spit out the answer for you.
You're going to have to work at it a little bit.
A lot of people think the place to go is AARP, and, of course, they just get the plan that makes AARP the most money, not necessarily the one that's best for them.
Yeah, which is really, really too bad, because they're a big, big name, and, you know, people know it, and I think they kind of rely on that.
I went to an insurance broker and had her chart it all out, all the different plans, costs, all of that. Because I hate insurance. It's too confusing. But that's how I enrolled.
Well, and just so people know that if you don't sign up for Medicare when you're eligible at 65, if you choose to do that later, I don't care if you have your own insurance through work, if you're still working, if you don't sign up at 65 for at least the basic, what your
hospitalization,
yeah, you're hosed. Going forward, you pay a really big fee going forward. So you can't just close your eyes and wish it away. What else did you guys find out, Phil?
Let me see. What did we now run through? About 92% of older voters thought that AARP should be talking as much about out-of-pocket insurance costs, like copays and deductibles, instead of only talking about drug prices, and that they should be talking about premiums, and that they should be talking about insurance access, that insurance access to independent pharmacies. Of course, you know, when we talk about how they have this relationship with UnitedHealth, it's important to point out that includes UnitedHealth PBM subdivision, OptumRx, which...
What does that mean, PBM?
Their pharmacy benefit manager.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever had to deal with PBMs, but the PBMs essentially are contracted out by all of the healthcare plans to manage their drug benefits, and that can mean excluding certain drugs. It can mean requiring you to go to specific pharmacies. It can mean, you know, various practices to kind of try to reduce the cost of drugs. And, you know, they've been criticized for a lot of things, including, you know, excluding drugs on the basis of what makes money for them rather than what actually is medically justified, and also, in some cases, forcing people to go to, you know, big box pharmacies instead of their local independent one. And so, you know, these have been huge issues, but AARP is completely missing in action on them. They literally never talk about them, even though, you know, our poll shows seniors want them to talk about these issues. But, of course, if they make all their money from United, and United owns one of the largest pharmacy benefit managers, Optum, then, you know, you can understand why they want to avoid
that.
That's
going to be the best one for you.
Well, that explains a lot of the mail, because I'm 62 this year, so apparently they have me on some hot sheet.
Yeah,
I'm getting inundated with AARP stuff.
Oh, they're big. They market like
yep.
maniacs.
Yeah, I'd like the money back that they just market to me. I mean, crap, that can't be free.
I mean, how about if instead of skimming 5% off the top of all their plans, they could just charge 5% less, right? If they wanted it to be to benefit their members.
Yeah, because it's not like people haven't heard of AARP.
Yeah, I mean, it's just great.
They're trying to wear me down, I guess, before I make a choice, huh?
74% of the voters in our survey believe that the 5% skim is a junk fee, which I thought was an interesting one, since Biden gives every speech about how much he hates junk fees, but he never mentions that one, of course, because it benefits Democrats. I mean, I think we've run through most of it. Do you guys have the slide deck in front of you?
I'm looking at the survey. I mean, I was looking at your full survey, and I was. How did you decide who was going to be in this survey? Would you guys just?
Well, we used a major pollster, which is kind of expensive, but we wanted it to be especially credible with Republican candidates, because we were hoping that we'd get numbers that would show them winning messages that we could sort of convince them to use to kind of move this debate in the next cycle. And so we used McLaughlin & Associates, which is Trump's pollster. And what we asked them to do is we asked them to design a sample that would be large enough to give us not just statistically valid numbers for older voters overall, but also statistically valid numbers for AARP members specifically. And so they ended up surveying about 1,600 people, and about 700 of them were AARP members. And so we got a pretty narrow margin of error on all these numbers we've been talking about. I think it's about 2.5% margin of error for the overall older voter sample, and it was 3.7% for AARP members. And so we were able to produce numbers that I think are pretty meaningful. And of course, you know, everyone gets on pollsters about how wrong they are and how many elections they've missed and how polls are bad and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, but when you're talking about 90 or 95% of people agreeing on something, it could be off by 10 or 20, but it still tells you.
That's a lot out of 1,600 people. I mean, really, and I was looking at just the beginning part with the voters. You had 50 were Republican, 41 Democratic candidates of you know how they would best describe who they'd vote for. So you had a pretty good split there too. It wasn't even heavily weighted one way or the other. That was kind of that's kind of helpful because then you're getting people who listen to wildly different news sources as well. We have to take a really quick break, one last break, and then we'll be back with our guest, Phil Kirpin. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Make a supersonic man out of you. Stop me now.
I'm having such a good time. I'm having a ball.
This is Officer Joe with your marijuana message. Don't buy the corporate marijuana lies whose end game is to not pay any taxes. California has failed to control the grows. Dispensaries are selling out the back door as well as selling other illicit substances. Do we really need the damage to the environment, suicide, schizophrenia, hyperemesis, cardiac events in elderly users, drug driving crashes, genetic damage, pulmonary damage, neonatal low birth weight, and lost IQ for our youth? No, we don't. Remember, let's be careful out there.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there, without care, yeah, I was out.
Pretty sure if we ever figure the Medicare thing out, that does make us crazy.
Yeah, I think
or it'll make us crazy while we're trying to figure it out. Oh my gosh! So, Phil, just out of curiosity, how much did you know about Medicare before you started working on this?
Well, I know a fair amount about the finances from sort of the government perspective because I've been working on these issues for a long time. Some of the questions you're asking. Not as much. I'm a little daring to deal with these firsthand. But, you know, it's definitely complicated. And
it is. It's just a minefield. I mean, you start looking at this and, you have a lot of people who just, I mean, that's why they punch the AARP ticket. Just because it's already done.
Yeah.
They've heard of them before.
They must be good.
Everybody's doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't actually see it, but did you have a question about that? Like, if you were an AARP person, why'd you do it or not do it?
I don't think we had something exactly.
I just was curious. What made them go that route or not? Like,
you know, it's probably marketing more than anything. You see a million ads for something, you can take a look at it, and they've got, you know. In some markets, they may have the best. They may have the best network. They may have the best. They may have the best benefit package. That kind of thing. So, you know, just.
Oh yeah, here it was.
They've got enough scale that even with the 5% skim, they can be pretty competitive.
Oh yeah, because here was one question 26. Do you have a favorable or unfavorable opinion of AARP? And favorable was 60.4. Unfavorable was 21.5. So. And never heard of was 0.7, so that tells you something. How did somebody never hear about it?
Phil, do you know, I don't know if this is really related, but on the money that they saved on the prescription plans, that went to EVs and you know, the
solar
green energy and all this. Do you know who specifically benefited?
Most of the money hasn't been allocated yet, so it's going to be, you know, there, but it's going to be all kinds of companies getting all kinds of grants and so forth. And a lot of it is, a lot of the spending is through the tax code. So they created, you know, these various refundable tax credits, which is one of the reasons that the price tag keeps rising, because there are going to be more companies claiming them than they originally estimated. Mm. And so it's basically, you know, they created a bunch of qualifying activities, and, you know, it's wind, solar, and EVs, and hydrogen, and various. And so, you know, companies are now in sort of a gold rush to get those tax dollars, essentially. And right. So it's, you know, it's very basically all of the companies that are pursuing those things. And then, of course, there's also a bunch of loan guarantee programs, and I think there's $300 billion of loan guarantees that the Energy Department will issue. And so there could be thousands of new Solyndras that are essentially financed with this money. You know, out of the so-called Inflation Reduction Act. And that doesn't even count in the cost, because the official scorekeepers assume that all the loans and loan guarantees will be paid back. And, of course,
well, that works all the time.
Not be, so it's going to be even more expensive, probably.
It was interesting. I'm looking here on one of your questions, on one of the questions for this, 35. Are you aware or unaware that AARP endorsed and supported the spending plan, the Inflation Reduction Act, that cost $740 billion to make significant changes to Medicare, and you had 80% were unaware of that. And I think that's pretty reflective of the public at large. Actually, it might be low.
That's definitely something I think a candidate should run on. You know.
Well, yeah, and we paired that, because the next question after that, we said, you know, if we said, are you aware or unaware that AARP supported the bill? And most were unaware. And then we said, do you think they should have supported the bill, considering that the funds that were taken out of prescription drug spending were used for unrelated spending and tax breaks?
Yeah.
And we said, you know, based on knowing that, should they have supported or opposed it? And 88% said they should have opposed it.
Right.
And it was the same number for overall and for AARP members specifically. So 88% of AARP's own members said they should have said the bill has to keep any Medicare savings inside of Medicare. And they obviously didn't do that.
Right.
So I do think that's a big vulnerability for them. And there's also a big business opportunity, right? There are a lot of conservative groups that are trying to call themselves the conservative anti-AARP. There's the AMAC, Association of Mature American Citizens. There's 60-plus Association. There are probably a couple others. You know, this is their chance, right? This is their chance. You know, I don't think they can spend as much on marketing as AARP does, but they certainly should be able to reach some potential customers and point out what AARP is doing and make some inroads with this, I hope.
Yeah, because the AMAC guys were big during the whole big Obamacare fight.
Yeah, I think that's when they kind of came on the scene.
Yeah, I heard about them a lot. I don't know how long they've been around, but you don't hear about them much now
at all.
But...
Well, I always see their ads on the Mark Levin show, so maybe we listen to different shows. But
because every time the commercials come on, I change the channel to something else.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you click more quickly. Yeah. Look, I mean, I think that Congress really needs to take a look at this, in particular, this idea of strengthening disclosure.
Yeah.
Anything 95% of people agree on is probably a good idea, and I really think that they should have to say, you know, they should have to tell people, look. We skim 5% off the top of your premium every month under this plan, and we have a huge interest in premiums being high, because that's how we make our money. If they get away with people not knowing that, then they're going to get away with misrepresenting who they are and what they and what they stand for,
right.
And they're going to keep disrupting these policy debates in a way that results in pretty bad outcomes from my standpoint. And so we've got to shine a spotlight on that. And of course. You know, the interesting thing about this issue is it would be great if Congress could actually strengthen disclosure rules, but we don't necessarily need that. All we need is people to know what's happening. And so I appreciate you giving me the chance to explain it to your audience, because everyone who's been listening to us for the past hour, they know this now, whether there's
longer
disclosure or not. And so I think we can accomplish, if Congress won't do it, you know, we can kind of do it ourselves, which is what I'm trying to do with the things we've been writing.
Yeah, to kind of spread the word, because the fact that, because it's interesting, one of your questions that they talked about, AARP has been vocal on prescription drug pricing issues, and they said, you know, 93% of people said they should be vocal on things like out-of-pocket expenses. All the kind of stuff was all in the 90% range. To advocate. I mean, people think that they should be advocating. So if that's not happening and it's basically a big self-enrichment, you don't hear anything about this. And it's interesting because you would think there would be some hay to be made with this, but it's pretty quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did we hear about when they were doing this horrible bill last year? You know, we heard about the... We heard about the tax hikes, and we heard about the spending, but we didn't really hear about, you know, the Democrats bragged about how they were going to reduce Medicare drug spending and how great that was, but I didn't hear any Republicans talk about the problem with that, and that it was actually going to create harms, and it was wrong to take that money out of Medicare. And so it was really a missed opportunity, and, you know, we're hoping to, you know, we're hoping these opportunities won't be missed, and that this next cycle we'll focus a little more on the vulnerability of, you know, the insurance industry, AARP, and Democrats working together, and use that as something that Republicans can maybe score some points on. And you know, that's what really changes politicians' behavior, is when something hurts them politically, they stop doing it. Until then, they keep doing it.
Right. And bringing up Medicare and Social Security has become just kind of a third rail deal that just always goes wrong on you, even with the best of intentions. But interestingly enough, question 48, as I'm scrolling here, I remembered this one. The federal government loses billions of dollars in improper payments, you know, on and on with that, and fraud and abuse. And would you support a dedicated congressional investigation? 95%. That was another 95%er. I mean, if you just went through this survey and did the things that were 95%, you could get a lot done.
Yeah, the waste, fraud, and abuse is outrageous in almost every government spending program, but certainly in the healthcare programs, it's off the charts. And UnitedHealth is a pretty bad offender in this regard. I mean, they've been caught repeatedly overbilling the government and various fraudulent practices and so forth. And you know, AARP is never going to say a peep about that, right? Because that's their cash cow.
That's right.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, definitely an area where, you know, I know people sort of roll their eyes when you say waste, fraud, and abuse, because they just assume it's going to go on forever and you're never going to cut much of it. But, you know, if you could actually make some progress on that, that could improve the financial outlook considerably.
Well, I think too, a lot of people are looking at it like, gosh, the last thing we need is more government intervention in any program, because it never seems to go right. So it's a
more
tough to sell that.
Well, except that they just kind of gave them a free pass, so now at this point we might want to go take a look at that. Is there an end point from the Inflation Reduction Act with the Medicare thing? Is this a change that was made that just goes on forever, or is there a time frame on it?
Well, the supposed reduction in cost, the supposed reduction in what seniors pay is supposed to take effect in a couple of years, but I will see if it ever actually happens. The big thing from a price control sort of disruption and innovation standpoint is that they're going to name, you know, basically 10 drugs where the Secretary of HHS is going to set the price instead of it being a market mechanism. And the consequence of that, you know, that hasn't happened yet. That happens in 2025. But we're already seeing basically every drug company canceling some of their clinical trials, especially for sort of more speculative cancer drugs, because the economics now are very different. It used to be, you know, you try to develop all of these drugs, and a lot of them don't amount to anything, but you get one that works and it pays for all the other ones, because you get to charge thousands of dollars for it, you make billions of dollars, and it sort of drives the whole cycle of investment, and it's the gusher that covers all the dry holes, if you will. Well, now you've basically told these companies, you know, if your gusher's too big, it's going to be capped by the Secretary of Health and Human Services, right? You're not going to be able to get your billions, you know, because you don't want to be in the top 10 of drugs, or else the government's going to set the price and you're not going to make your money back.
Right.
And so now the calculation for these companies is very different. It's kind of like, how do we develop drugs that'll be like a solid base hit, but not necessarily a home run, because we don't want to be on that top 10 list. And so the incentives are really different. And as a consequence of that, I think 7 or 8 major clinical trials have already been canceled. And I think they were all cancer drugs. And so we're definitely already seeing fewer new drugs being developed as a consequence of government, you know, interfering in the drug pricing system.
Yeah, see, that's
the
part
thing
that
people don't. I don't think that gets calculated when people
or they
look
don't
at,
understand.
Yeah, when people look at drug pricing, and you know, you hear, you know, that they can get medications cheaper out of Canada and different places like that. But those are blocked, and so it just becomes really convoluted, I guess.
The international thing is a big problem, and you know, Trump tried to address this, but you know, almost every other rich country gets a free ride on us, because they pay a fraction of what we pay, and they their logic is, hey, if Americans are covering the development costs, we don't have to.
Right.
And what they basically tell the drug companies is, you know, we're going to pay a much lower price than what the American price is, what a market price would be. And sometimes the manufacturers will say, then you don't get the drug. And, you know, it is true that in most of these countries, they don't get new drugs as quickly as we do, but they get them, you know, a few years later, typically, and they don't pay for the development costs. We do. And so they essentially get a free ride on us. And Trump really tried to address this through a variety of means, but most significantly through trade negotiations, basically saying that other countries had to pay more of a market price for drugs, so they would pay more and we would pay less. And he actually, you know, everyone kind of said, oh, you're never going to get another country to agree to pay more for drugs, but Trump did. He got Canada and Mexico to agree to pay more for biotech drugs when he renegotiated NAFTA and the USMCA. And believe it or not, that was one of the three things that Nancy Pelosi absolutely demanded had to be removed. And so Trump
got them
to agree to pay more for drugs, and Nancy Pelosi made them take it out.
Wow. Phil, we appreciate all the great information you've given us. I'm assuming we will chat with you soon again. Our guest has been Phil Kirpin, and we love having him on because he always brings all this great info. You can find this interview commercial-free at wethepeopleradio.us. For good.